You ready?
Ready?
Ready? Ready? Ready? One, two, three, four!
Podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. We have a lot on tap tonight, but first, a bit of a reminder to anybody who hasn't subscribed yet to the Missy AE podcast. You can do so first by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE, or you can subscribe at either iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or iHeartRadio. Just search for Missy AE, and you'll get access to all of our previous shows that we've done, as well as shows that may be coming up, including we did just interview Paul and Connie Wachter from Survivor Millennials versus Gen X this past Thursday. this past, yeah, I think it was Thursday night. So, that is definitely one you're going to want to, you're going to want to listen to if you're a Survivor fan. But let's get started. Lou, there was one huge, we thought that NBA free agency was just going to be like any other, like it's
wrong.
Like, okay. We'll see certain players sign relatively quickly. But apparently there was somebody who decided that they didn't want the spotlight on free agency, and instead they wanted the spotlight
right
on themselves. So we will talk about this first before we get into free agency. Kevin
yes.
Durant. Kevin Durant requested a trade out of Brooklyn. And from my understanding, the reason behind it is because, number one, Brooklyn failed to do a sign-and-trade for Kyrie Irving,
right,
which basically, I guess it pissed off Durant to the point where, he doesn't believe that Nets ownership and management can get them back into playoff contention, that they can't make the right moves necessary in order to get them into playoff.
Couldn't make the right moves. They were an injury to the team. COVID just wrecked them. After that, they were never the same. I mean, they were projected to go to the finals this year, which I thought was a little bit far fetched. But overhyped, and their defense was lacking everything. So it's not that surprising. The big three turned out to be a big disaster. They were lucky enough to get into the playing game.
Yeah, I will say this in regards to the Nets. I think they would have had a much better opportunity had Joe Harris been healthy, because he was one key missing ingredient that they were missing this year when it came to perimeter shooting. And that's definitely something he excels at. Now, would I say it's all on the big three? I wouldn't exactly say that. The big three, they seemed to be gelling the times that they were even able to be on the court at the same time. Obviously, James Harden, asking to be traded, that didn't really help matters. What also didn't help matters was the fact that Ben Simmons, never saw the court. And part of it was mental issues. Part of it was truly because of a back issue that apparently had been lingering even during his time in Philadelphia. But I think this is a bit of a shocker here, considering the fact that Durant and Irving had been very outspoken about being committed to the Brooklyn Nets and wanting to bring a championship to Brooklyn. And now all of a sudden we had all the Irving drama that, whether or not he would opt into his final year. And everybody thought, once Irving did in, it's business as usual for the Brooklyn Nets, Any rumors about Kyrie being traded were basically bullshit. And that's another thing we'll get into as well, because Kyrie is potentially on the verge of being traded at some point during this weekend. I would not be surprised if come Tuesday he's already on a different team. But Durant, this is 34. He's going to be 34 years old at the start of next year. At the start of next season, he has 4 years remaining on his deal. So, and considering how some of the trades went down heading into free agency, this has significantly increased Brooklyn's asking price for Durant. According to one of the writers, I think it was Chris Haynes who said it. I might be wrong. It could be Chris Haynes, or it's one of the prominent basketball writers. But what they said was that the current asking price is two All-Stars, potentially a young player, and a mountain of draft picks. And we're talking first-round picks.
Yeah.
Now, I would understand if I would understand if it was for somebody a bit younger, or maybe that price is right, considering the fact that Durant, I mean, you take a look at his numbers. He's basically LeBron James, 29.9 points per game last year, 7.4 rebounds, 6.4 assists. I mean, he's basically still in his prime. And actually, let me take a look. He shot 51.8% from the field last year during the regular season. So, I guess, what do you think about that price, Lou? At least two All-Stars, potentially a young player, and multiple draft picks. And keep in mind, Rudy Gobert got four first-round picks for the Jazz.
Yeah, and he's being traded from the Jazz. Jazz are in trouble now. He was a key part of the success. So, the Jazz are going to have to work it out for the next season. That's a pretty MVP, ask me, with all the draft picks and whatnot. This has been what I call season frenzy, and has really turned into a frenzy this year.
But you would have to think, Lou, that with that being the price, the haul that Utah got for Rudy Gobert, which honestly I feel that it was an overpay Minnesota paid, wouldn't you think that this would mean that basically the price for Kevin Durant is going to go up?
It's going to go up. It has to.
I don't know how many drafts.
Yeah, he went.
Go ahead.
To go. He doesn't seem to be happy. Have you ever wondered that? He does not seem to be happy wherever he goes. And now he's going, he was going to try to be with the Nets. We win a championship. He does it well. True, that's not going somewhere else. So now he's in Philadelphia. Now he wants to leave that. Kevin Durant is whack.
Well, you kind of have to wonder. Let's do a hypothetical here. The Boston Celtics, they're rumored to be one of the teams interested in Kevin Durant. So the Nets asking price, from the sounds of it, it looks like two All-Stars, and if they can't get a second All-Star, then they would want a young player. I'm trying to think of a young player to use for I'll use Toronto as an example. So let's say Toronto trades Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby.
Okay.
As the two All-Star caliber players. But let's say they're hung up on one of those All-Stars. So okay, if you're not going to give us Fred VanVleet or OG Anunoby, then we want Scottie Barnes. We want a budding young superstar in Scottie Barnes. Plus, Rudy Gobert got four first-round picks, so we're going to look for five first-round picks. I don't know how many first-round picks can be dealt in a single trade, but it really seems like basically whoever is going to trade for Durant is going to basically mortgage their future, essentially.
Yeah.
Which, honestly,
smart though. It's mortgage your whole future for one guy, for a few players. So I don't think it'd be worth doing that.
Yeah, but what if Durant is the one guy that puts you over the hump and brings you an NBA title?
Yeah, but we've heard this before, with certain teams, also with the Nets, so I don't know if he's actually your man to do it. I mean, we've heard it all before. Durant hasn't even been, it's not what he used to be. He's getting up there now, and I don't think it's going to be just him alone that can bring them a title.
Here's another example. with the 76ers. The 76ers are supposedly going to be involved as well, and a deal from them would consist of probably, you would probably have to include Tyrese Maxey in the deal. You would probably have to include Tobias Harris, probably Matisse Thybulle.
Plus,
you would have to include multiple first-round picks. Now, I could potentially see Philadelphia doing that type of deal because, yeah, you're giving up a guy who many believe will be a future face of the league potentially in Maxey.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're also getting a guy like Durant. If you pair him up with Joel Embiid and James Harden, and some of the other talent that they have on that roster, you know, that could potentially put Philadelphia over the top. Because I mean, imagine that. Imagine having to face off against Joel Embiid, James Harden, and Kevin Durant on the same team.
Okay. Enough water right here now. That's going to be tough.
I mean,
I got to measure up those guys.
It's crazy. Now, supposedly they're going to supposedly hold some sort of auction, I guess you could call it. You could refer to it that way, as an auction of some sort, where apparently there's going to be at least 20 teams interested in trading for Durant, and the Nets are going to try to get basically. Go ahead.
I didn't hear anything in the Celtics in the reports. I didn't hear. It's, of course, that doesn't mean that they're not interested, but I didn't get them on the report that he was on the list, that they were on the list of teams that are interested in him.
The Celtics, the ones that I heard were landing spots were Portland, Miami, Phoenix, Boston, and I forget who the fifth one was.
I only heard Phoenix. But then again,
and Dallas.
When I wrote the report yesterday, I only heard that the Suns and the Heat were interested. I mean, nothing came up about, about Dallas or Boston or anything else. So, you know, maybe it was just, might have just done it too quickly. But that's what I heard from what I reported yesterday. This must have just came up, later.
Right. As everything was going on like it was. As information was flying out there, here's the problem though. I take a look at the Heat and I take a look at the Suns, which are his two most preferred destinations. The only problem here is it's been reported that Brooklyn will only do a deal with Phoenix if they include Devin Booker. Which, number one, they're not going to include Devin Booker because you're not going to trade Booker just to replace him with Durant. You want to pair up Booker with Durant. Number two, I believe Booker is still under. I might be wrong, but I believe he is still under the rookie max deal, which is basically if you come off of your rookie contract and you sign a max deal, it counts as a rookie max.
Right.
Now, the problem with this is, as an NBA rule, you cannot have more than one rookie max contract on your team.
Correct.
Which would mean that Ben Simmons would have to be involved in any such a deal. Now, that would be fine.
Really?
Yeah, that's a big problem. I mean, it would be fine, but the problem is the asking price would go up. So a team that's already giving up a team that's already giving up a huge amount just to get Durant,
in terms of dollar wise, what was the amount, or no one knows that.
I don't know what the dollar amount is. I know Durant, I think Durant is making, hang on, let me look real quick.
Yeah.
When I say price, I mean price in terms of, like, who they would have to unload.
Okay, yeah.
Durant is set to make 42, or he'll be a cap hit of $44 million, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And Ben Simmons, I want to say he's around 30. I could be wrong. Ben Simmons.
Simmons,
yeah,
around
Ben
30
Simmons
million?
Is 35. Ben Simmons is his cap hit is 35, almost 35 and a half million.
Hmm.
So that's
not worth
it. You know, obviously you would have to match salaries, but beyond that, not only would you have to match salaries, but you would also think of what Brooklyn had to give up in order to get Ben Simmons as part of that package with James Harden. So they're going to probably be asking – they're probably going to be asking for a shit ton more if they were to include both Ben Simmons and Kevin Durant in the same deal.
Take Durant, leave Simmons behind.
The other option would be to somehow maybe turn it into a three-team deal, and they ship off Ben Simmons elsewhere while Kevin Durant somehow goes to either Phoenix or Miami, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, take the three-team deal.
Now, in Miami's case, it's the same thing with Bam Adebayo. I believe Bam Adebayo is still on his rookie max deal.
Yes.
So
yes. Bam.
So if they were to acquire Bam Adebayo, which is what Brooklyn would want, they would have to also include Ben Simmons in any potential Miami deal. Because of the rookie max rule. So it's going to be a very complicated process that Brooklyn's going to be going through here, because that may potentially take Phoenix or Miami out of the running. I mean, Miami, they could easily offer, you know, Tyler Harrow. They could offer – they have a ton of assets to throw at Brooklyn. But the main problem is the rookie max deals. So,
yes.
Now Boston, on the other hand, Boston is another team that's interested. The rumored package that's been talked about is you would see Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart packaged as part of the deal to go with multiple first round picks. I don't know if they would include a third player or not, but that's basically a theoretical package that Boston could potentially offer, especially with them acquiring Malcolm Brogdon like they did yesterday.
Yes, I remember how to call that.
Might I add, the acquisition of Brogdon, they basically get you can basically say that as they gave up a first-round pick for Brogdon, which,
yes.
I mean, let's face it, all of the other players that they traded away, Daniel Tice is nothing. Aaron Nesmith is even more than nothing. And they also traded away a whole bunch of garbage time players, basically, to make the salaries match up.
Uh-huh.
Now, that is the reason why. Go ahead.
In other words, you're really giving up nothing.
Pretty much. I mean, Daniel Tice, he got absolutely abused by the Warriors in the playoffs.
Right.
And you notice that ever since that first game, they didn't play Daniel Theis at all the remaining series,
right,
or the remaining games in the series. So Theis definitely, I believe, lost a bit of favor with Boston because of that performance. And also the fact that they were signing Danilo Gallinari, which Gallinari is basically his replacement on the bench. So here's the main reason why I think Marcus Smart may be potentially on the outs in Boston and would probably be involved in any Kevin Durant deal is because you take a look at their point guard room. Who they currently have at point guard. They got Marcus Smart. They got Derek White, who they traded their first-round pick this year for. They got Peyton Pritchard, and now they got Malcolm Brogdon. You're not going to have four point guards and expect to play all four of them. Somebody has to get moved. But you know what's weird enough, though, Lou, is that immediately after Boston acquired Malcolm Brogdon, they were marked as favorites to win the NBA title for this upcoming season by Vegas, which completely astounds me.
Yeah, it astounds me as well. Of course, they're also picking the Nets, too. Like, yeah, okay, Dobby, you heard that one before. I mean, I think
they they're not taking the Nets, actually. Believe it or not, the Nets are their price is going down even more in terms of they're becoming more and more of underdogs by the hour almost.
Which doesn't surprise me. But 2 weeks ago, you know, they were considered one of the favorites. I'm like, oh, yeah, right.
They were, yeah.
They were the favorite this year, too. Yeah, bull. Okay, so this doesn't surprise me that their stock is down. And they're not more between, like, you know, the underclass because, you know, they have played like underclass the whole year. Oh, boy, if only that shot would have been made in game seven of the first round in 2021, it would be a whole different story. But no. And since then, they haven't done jack.
I'm telling you, you know, if they had Joe Harris healthy this past season, it could have been a lot different for Brooklyn.
Well, if Joe Harris was healthy, and if Irving, you know, would have got his string out with the vaccine, you know, we would have been a lot better. Of course, he had to be a jackass about it. Like, no, I'm not going to get the vaccine. Okay, I'll just play away games, and you know, so that's, you know, that was another factor there. You got to stay healthy if you want to go far and make it to the playoffs and get to the finals. If you're a train wreck with injuries, COVID or whatever, it's not going to matter because you won't get anywhere.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. I'm surprised at Boston being labeled as the favorites for the NBA title.
Yeah.
What I'm not surprised at is they're listed as the favorites to win the East. And I say I'm not surprised. And the only reason I say that because you take a look at free agency. Milwaukee, mm-hmm. all they did was add Joe Ingles, who is coming off of an injury and who knows what condition he's going to be in next year. Plus, obviously, Milwaukee will have a healthy Chris Middleton. Miami, they just lost P.J. Tucker. P.J. Tucker went to Philadelphia on a three-year, and in my opinion, overpaid. A three-year, I think it's like $32 million deal or something like that. I mean, you know, Chicago didn't really do much. And if anything, there's talk that maybe perhaps Nikola Vucevic might potentially be on the move at some point this offseason. So Chicago, even though they'll be healthy next year, may not have the same team. Atlanta, they did get DeJounte Murray, but it's going to take more than DeJounte Murray for Atlanta to be a true contender again. So apart from that, really, I mean, the only two threats I see to Boston in the East is Miami and Milwaukee. Because Miami, they brought back Victor Oladipo on a 1-year deal, which was a good move for them. I thought it would be very stupid if they allowed Oladipo to walk.
Yeah,
they did lose PJ Tucker, but honestly, you know, PJ, they can easily give PJ Tucker's minutes away. Maybe perhaps Duncan Robinson will start to see more minutes next year. And plus, like I mentioned last week, or maybe it was the week before, Duncan Robinson was very sparingly used this year, and he had, considering how he used to be such a sharpshooter, if he can ever get back to that, that way of shooting, you know, he could very easily be one of their top shooters again.
Yeah,
for the Heat. So, you know, that's something obviously that is going to keep Miami in the thick of things. And plus, you know, they have Tyler Herro, who actually, you know, with PJ Tucker going to Philly, this probably opens the door for Tyler Herro to officially become a starter. Which, considering he was the sixth man of the year this year, you know, and he said he's been looking to get an opportunity. He's been looking to get an opportunity to start on a regular basis. This would be the time to potentially do that. On the other hand, though, so Kevin Durant, with him being under contract for 4 years, it kind of makes sense why they're going to ask for as much as they're going to ask for him in any trade moving forward. Kyrie, on the other hand, here's why I think the Nets won't be a problem next year, because not only are they losing Kyrie and potentially Durant, There's a current trade being talked about right now between the Lakers and the Nets that would send Kyrie Irving and Joe Harris potentially. So you're going to lose not just Irving, but you're going to lose Harris in this deal as well to the Los Angeles Lakers in exchange for Russell Westbrook, Talen Horton Tucker, and their first-round pick in 2027, I think it was, that was mentioned. So that's the current package that's being talked about right now, as Kyrie Irving is supposedly trying to, and this is just, I'm taking it from how they're writing it, he's trying to force his way out of Brooklyn, essentially, and force his way to L.A. Which, honestly, I mean, going from Kyrie Irving to Russell Westbrook, I would consider that a little bit of a downgrade. Although maybe perhaps with Russell Westbrook being looked at as the guy again, because let's face it, depending on what this Brooklyn Nets roster is going to look like afterwards, Russell Westbrook may be the main star on that team. So we may start to see triple doubles again from Westbrook next year, if this trade goes through.
So he'll be back
now.
No,
you're most definitely getting Westbrook.
I know, but he was really off this past season, though. He was really off.
He was, but that may have been because he had to share the court with, you know, LeBron James, who was a ball hog.
Right.
And Anthony Davis, who is a ball hog.
That's true.
But with him coming back to, or with him going to Brooklyn potentially, that would open up more opportunities for him to be the Russell Westbrook that he was with Oklahoma City, or even the Russell Westbrook that he was with Houston?
Well, I don't know about that.
Now, the big holdup in this whole process, though, is apparently, from my understanding, according to Chris Haynes, is the Nets want Joe Harris to be involved in the deal going to L.A., while L.A. instead would prefer Steph Curry be involved in the deal instead of Joe Harris.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically a standoff right now between both teams in terms of what they want in the package. So
right.
It's definitely something that's holding up the process right now as it goes for Kyrie Irving to L.A. But let me bring in Alex and get his thoughts on this. Alex, how you doing tonight?
Hey, Steve, guys, I'm so sorry. I should have told you I was going to be out tonight, and I got a sore throat. I'm visiting my mom in Florida.
Oh, okay, no problem.
I'm always accountable, so I just want to at least pop in and say hi, and I'll be on next week.
Oh, okay.
I hope everything's going to be better,
Alex. Yeah. I haven't seen my mom in 5 years, so I'm just being with the family for the weekend.
Right.
I don't blame you, man. Yeah, enjoy the weekend. I have a real sore throat, but enjoy the great show, and I'll be back next week.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Take care. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we will have Alex back next week, and I believe Kyle will be joining us at some point tonight. He said he was going to call in.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, Lou, it's definitely going to be a different Brooklyn Nets team next year. I mean, you did get Patty Mills to come back, and you also got Nicholas Claxton to come back as well. However,
Claxton.
I mean, you take away Kevin Durant and you take away Kyrie Irving, and potentially Harris, that's basically going to put, you know, a huge dent in what a contending roster should potentially look like.
I was going to say that.
So more than likely, and here's the bad part too. The bad part too is in the James Harden trade, the original trade, acquiring him from Houston. Brooklyn sent all of their first round picks until 2027.
Yeah.
To Houston. So they're going to have to undergo this rebuild.
Uh-huh.
Without draft picks. So, you know, I don't see how this actually may be worse than the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce ordeal that they went through when they sent all those picks to Boston. But I just find it fascinating, though, that this was, this is basically they put all of their eggs in the Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant basket, and they were hoping that they'd be able to win by adding James Harden into the mix. So they put all their eggs into that one big three. And I will say this, Brooklyn, if it wasn't for James Harden, for them saying that James Harden's foot was on the line, or was it James Harden? No, it was Durant, I think, that his foot was on the line. You know, they could have potentially advanced.
Yeah.
The year that Milwaukee ended up taking it all.
That's right. If this foot wasn't lying, Milwaukee wouldn't be NBA champions.
So, you know, that right there, I mean, I guess, yeah, you can call this big three a failure, but, you know, had it gone differently and had the shoe fallen the other way in that one instance, you could have potentially seen Brooklyn go all the way in 2021. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of when all of this is going to happen, I mean, Lou, honestly, I would not be surprised at all if we get a 4th of July announcement. Like how we did a couple of years ago when Kevin Durant decided that he was going to Golden State.
Yes.
So, you know, I would not be surprised at all if we see a repeat of that where, you know, it's announced that Durant is being traded on Monday, actually, on the 4th of July.
Talk about your fireworks.
Yeah, you want to talk about fireworks. I mean, granted, we'll just say the whole entire league saw some fireworks this past, the past couple of days here. But in terms of, here's the problem. If there are any trades that are set to take place, the Kevin Durant ordeal is holding up everything, basically, because there are teams that if they have to match salary in a potential deal with Brooklyn, they don't want to make other trades right now in case they may potentially have to use those other players as part of the deal. So, you know, it's I go all the way. Maybe this is just me being a Boston homer, but something just seems really odd to me. The fact that they acquired Malcolm Brogdon, who is a former All-Star, who is a starting point guard, when they already have a starting point guard in Marcus Smart. And they have another potential starting point guard in Derek White. So, I mean, it's really weird to have seven starters on, you know, to have seven starters on one team. Especially with two of them off of the bench of being at the same position, point guard. Let me bring in Kyle right now to get his thoughts on the Durant and Irving saga. Kyle, first off, how's it going?
I'm good. I'm good. All is well. You know, after I'm done meeting my celebrities for the week.
Yeah. For anybody who doesn't know, Kyle actually ran into Bobby Lashley of the WWE this week. While he was at, I believe it was the airport, right?
Yeah, so I work in Dallas at DFW, and it's becoming like a regular thing. Today I saw Mike Leach. He was going to Billings. I'm assuming he was going on a recruiting trip, but he was with his wife, so I didn't want to intrude too much. But yeah, I got to meet Bobby Lashley and MVP, actually. One of my friends noticed Bobby Lashley, and he's like, "Hey, like, that's Bobby Lashley," and I was like, "Oh, cool." I was a little hesitant to go up to him, but he's a good guy. He let me take a picture with him, and MVP wasn't that nice, but still, I got to say what's up to the two. And Bobby Lashley, you know, I said hello, so it was definitely a cool experience.
Not to mention Bobby Lashley, the new United States champion as of tonight, defeating Austin Theory at Money in the Bank. So, to say hello to you got to take a picture with the new United States champion as of tonight.
Nice.
But what are you know? We've been talking about the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving saga that's going on right now in Brooklyn,
right.
And what seems like it seems like they have definitively played their final game in a Brooklyn Nets uniform. First off, we'll start with Durant. Like I said earlier, before you called in, the asking price for Durant, especially after the Rudy Gobert trade, which saw them get 4 first round picks for Gobert, going to Utah along with other players. The asking price for Brooklyn for Durant is supposedly 2 All-Stars. And if they can't get the second All-Star, they're looking for a young player, as well as what's being described as a mountain of first-round picks.
Yeah. So my take on KD, go ahead, if you want to follow up with that with a question or something.
I was just going to say. What are your thoughts on? On the whole Kevin Durant situation, because it seemed like Durant and Irving, you know, once Irving opted in to his player option, it seemed like both Durant and Irving were committed to, mm-hmm. you know, to bringing a championship to Brooklyn.
Right. So this stems back to KD when he, you know, when he first made that big move and went to Golden State, I want to go on record and say I've never liked KD. At Texas, I didn't like KD. So this goes back years ago. But for him, you can tell there's players that are out there who just look for the money and the bag and whatever. But you can tell other players who really want to win. Like Steph, you know, it's probably a bad example, but Steph loves Golden State. They love him. You know, he's going to always be a Warrior. You know, he's never going to leave. They pretty much are going to build San Francisco around Steph Curry. but, yeah, KD, I think, is starting to get to his head more than the heart of the game. And I don't like players like that. I would rather somebody, you know, who comes off the bench, gives you 10 points a game, and gives you his all. Than KD. I don't know. KD has lost his sense of maybe the love of the game, I guess you'd say. But, yeah, somebody who deserves – like, I don't know. I've never liked KD, and I just think this whole entire situation is so fishy. I'd like, good riddance, KD. Thank you for nothing. Thank you for setting us back years again. It kind of reminds me of the Paul Pierce trade and all that fun stuff. Brooklyn is just a team that wants to win now. Unlike the Celtics, who have been building a team who are going to contend in the East, you know, for 5-6 years, you know.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the Celtics because I want to also get your thoughts on the Malcolm Brogdon acquisition because this kind of leaves them, you know, very crowded at the point guard position now all of a sudden. And Boston is rumored – Boston is rumored to be one of the teams that is in on the Kevin Durant auction, as they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
Could
right.
we potentially see? Could we potentially see somebody like a Marcus Smart or a Derek White get moved as part of a Kevin Durant deal?
So here's the thing: if they're asking for 2 big name superstars, are you willing to give up Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant? I'm not.
Brown is supposedly one of the names that's being thrown out there. Not Tatum, though.
Right. But you have to lose one of them. You know, he's asking for a big name superstar. You know, so I wouldn't do it. If I'm Danny Ainge or anybody in that organization, you know, I'd be like, no, like, this isn't going to happen. I don't want this. Why would I want to blow up my young core to get KD a snake? What, so he can get 2 years and then he wants to leave Boston? Like, no.
Bottom line, by the way, they can't trade Tatum unless – because Tatum falls under that rookie max contract again.
Oh,
That rule. that rule where you can't have more than one rookie max contract under your club at the same time. So if Tatum were to be traded, Ben Simmons would have to be involved in the deal.
That's all we need.
Now we have Kyrie Irving, who is being rumored to be involved in a trade to LA, which would include so basically it, from the regular framework that it looks like right now. Kyrie and Russell Westbrook are a certain, you know, they're certain to be involved in the deal.
Right.
Also, Talen Horton Tucker and a 2027 first round pick going to Brooklyn. The problem here is Brooklyn wants to include Joe Harris as part of the deal going to LA. However, LA wants Steph Curry to be that second player heading over. So, what are your thoughts on Kyrie potentially moving out to LA to go back to LeBron's shadow?
See, that's so weird to me because he left because he didn't want to be under LeBron's shadow, and now he wants to be under LeBron's shadow again. Right, and so I don't know. That's weird. I mean, if I was LA, I would definitely want Seth Curry. See, the thing with LA is I didn't think they had enough spacing last year. Like, cool. We all know Russ can't hit threes consistently. I mean, occasionally he can probably hit two or three a night. But with Seth Curry, you're going to get somebody who's a splash, who's going to put up 5-6 3-point shots a night. And he's going to, you know, make them, you know. This Kyrie thing is weird, too. I mean, dude, like, you left because you didn't want to be under LeBron's shadow, and now you want to be best buddies with LeBron again? Like, if I'm LeBron, I'm looking at this as, no, I don't want you. I mean, I know Bradley Beal just got fined to that next contract in Washington. I would want somebody like Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal's going to facilitate, he's going to play hard defense, and you need somebody like that to play with LeBron, you know? But I don't like this idea of Kyrie. I mean, I got to stick with my Duke players, but, man, like, you're kind of putting Duke, like, a shame. Like, I'm kind of ashamed that Kyrie went to Duke now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who has burned three different teams in a span of 5 years. He burned Cleveland, then he burned Boston, and now he's burning Brooklyn.
Right.
All within the span of 5 years. I mean, honestly, I don't think there's one other superstar that you can look at and say that and say the same thing. I don't think there's one other superstar that has done that.
No.
You know, when a superstar has done it, they usually have played out their contract. They don't literally try to force themselves from their current team onto another team like Kyrie is trying to do right now. And Durant, you know, Durant, I can understand why Durant wants out, because he's probably tired of dealing with Kyrie, and he's probably tired of dealing with Ben Simmons as well. But imagine that. Imagine Russell Westbrook and Ben Simmons on the same team next year. Two head cases.
Boy. You know what's funny is that would be one of the easiest teams to guard, though, because they both can't hit a consistent jump shot. Like, literally all you have to do is stay from a three-point. I would beg Brooklyn to hit every single three-point shot in the world.
Well, I wouldn't ask them to do that when Patty Mills is on the court, because they did re-sign Patty Mills and he can shoot. And if they keep Joe Harris or if they keep Seth Curry, whoever they keep is very good at 3-point shooting as well. So
right.
I wouldn't go that far. I would dare them to have Ben Simmons land a 3-point shot, which, let's face it, he can't.
Right.
He can only do layups. Maybe I would try to dare Ben Simmons to have to do it on a consistent basis. But, you know, if they still have Joe Harris or they still have Seth Curry, and plus they got Patty Mills out there, and who knows, if they bring back Blake Griffin can still land 3-pointers. So
yes, true.
I mean, one big loss. I forgot about this. They lost Bruce Brown as well, because he's going to, I think it was Denver. So there's definitely, you want to talk about a different team next year. Bruce Brown was probably one of their. probably one of their better players during that playoff series against Boston. So, needless to say, though, that Brooklyn team is going to be drastically different.
Yes.
And the thing is, too, is that they're going to have to rebuild without their own draft picks. I mean, who knows? Obviously, they're going to get draft picks in the Irving and Durant deals, but who knows what years those will be for. I mean, depending on what happens, it could be a considerable amount of time before they can even utilize those draft picks. I got to tell you, though, you know, if I'm Houston, I'm celebrating that James Harden deal now, because, I mean, those first-round picks are going to be – those first-round picks from Brooklyn are going to be looking mighty appetizing in the upcoming years. And just think about that, too, with the moves that Houston has made – in recent, with the draft and everything, you already have Jalen Green on your roster. You're trying to trade away Eric Gordon to the 76ers, which, from the sounds of it sounds like that is going to happen.
Yes.
You end up getting a kid who's now going to have a chip on his shoulder in Jabari Smith Jr. Which by the way, I'm still stunned that Paolo Banchero went first.
Well, Joe.
I mean, I know Kyle, you have a different aspect on that, but I'm still stunned that somehow Paolo Banchero went from being universally the favorite to be picked number 3 overall to all of a sudden being drafted number 1 overall.
Right.
But I take a look at the Rockets, though. They got Jabari Smith to join Jalen Green. They got Terry Eason from LSU, who I know Boston was looking at potentially getting into the first round to try and take Terry Eason. They got Ty Washington from Kentucky. I mean, Houston, and plus with those draft picks from Brooklyn that Houston got, Houston's future is looking pretty damn bright.
Yeah.
Right.
If chips fall a certain way and Brooklyn ends up being a disaster for the next couple of years, I mean, those could be some pretty high picks. Now, going into free agency, though, obviously, all of the players that we thought would sign extensions ended up signing extensions. You got Karl Anthony Towns, Darius Garland, Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal, you know, all the big names signed long-term extensions with their respective teams. However, maybe one of the bigger names on the market, and we saw this start. We saw this process start with the draft when the Knicks decided to give up the 11th overall pick in an attempt to clear space for this guy. Jalen Brunson is now officially a New York Knicks.
Yep.
So let's get your thoughts first, Kyle, on that. Jalen, you know, the Knicks decided to go with a unusual method of not taking, you know, a high overall pick in the draft, and instead deciding to use the opportunity to try and clear space to go after the top point guard of this year's class of free agents. Do you think it was a smart move, Kyle, for the Knicks to take that approach and basically go all in on one specific player?
No, I think it's crazy. I mean, especially with this year's free agency, it's just been a wild free agency so far. I mean, I don't know. It's just odd. I don't know if that was a good idea. I don't think it was, but, you know, that's why I don't make the big bucks and I don't make those decisions, but I wouldn't have done that. I mean, you never
okay, well,
I know. I don't know.
Oh, Lou, what are your thoughts on Jalen Brunson? Because, you know, the Knicks, they basically went all out to sign this guy. There was no foregone conclusion that he was going to be a Knick when
right.
they made the moves that they did. I mean, was this a smart play by the Knicks, considering, you know, the fact that they have so much dysfunction? I mean, yeah, they got rid of Kemba Walker's contract, but...
Yeah.
Now they bring in Jalen Brunson like he's supposed to be the solution to the Knicks' problem.
Well, I mean, the trade was right, but I don't think Brunson's, you know, the right man. I don't think he's gonna be enough. But you know, as far as the trade goes, yeah, that was a smart move. Yeah, but Brunson, yeah, but they did get like a position player. So it's kind of really iffy about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Brunson right now, 16.3. What was that? What was that, Lou?
I thought that was 16.3. Because they can go either way.
But, I mean, Jalen Brunson, 16.3 points per game last year, 3.9 rebounds and 4.8 assists. I mean, if I'm being honest here, yeah, those are good numbers. Those are good numbers for a point guard, but, I mean, I would expect the assist number to be up a little higher. You know, if I'm a team that is looking – I mean, because keep in mind, you know, the Knicks are probably going to have to trade Julius Randle before everything's all said and done.
Right.
So they still have to send – stuff out. I guess the whole thing was, you know, they were really high on that Ivy kid in the draft, and once they were unable to trade up and get him, you know,
right.
that's basically the fallback option was, okay, now we have to go and get Brunson instead.
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of high draft picks, Keegan Murray, who was taken by Sacramento in the draft. Tonight in the summer league, 26 points, 8 rebounds on 71% shooting, including 4 out of 5 from 3. Granted, it's Summer League, but granted, it's Summer League, Lou, but Keegan Murray, if he can put up these type of numbers during the regular season, could the Kings potentially be a team to watch out for in the West?
Keep in mind, we are talking about the Kings, and we know how it's been over the last, like, two decades or so. I wouldn't get my hopes on. Yes, he's doing well for Summer League, and that's fine, but... But I don't know how it's going to translate over into the regular season. I wouldn't put my money on Keegan or the Sacramento Kings.
Let's take a look at Sacramento. Yeah, but if we take a look at Sacramento though, they signed Malik Monk to upgrade their 3-point shooting. They ended up trading for Kevin Huerter from Atlanta.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have definitely improved their roster so far this offseason. Now, keep in mind, they also have Domantas Sabonis, originally from Indiana.
Yes.
If they can get Keegan Murray to be playing at a high level, it's entirely possible that you could potentially be looking at maybe a potential dark horse. Maybe finally Sacramento gets it all together.
Maybe, but I wouldn't, like I said, I wouldn't put any money on that.
I mean, it's still a little iffy, I guess, with Sacramento, but obviously we have to see how the rookies translate. I mean, it's good to begin with the fact that that he's playing so well in the summer league just to start off the summer league, but
right. It's
obviously different competition when you're facing off against actual NBA players. Although they were facing off against Golden State's summer league team, which.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're being honest, you know, Golden State probably has one of the better prospect teams, you know, in terms of prospect pools out there. So maybe perhaps that is something to keep an eye out for. Because let me take a look right now, because Sacramento won 86-68. Keegan Murray was the leading scorer for Sacramento. Let's see, who did Golden State have? Wow. Okay, so no, they didn't have Wiseman. They didn't have Kuminga. They didn't have Moody or J.D. Note. Wow, so basically all of Golden State's big, rookie players did not play in this first matchup. So, okay, maybe that's we'll see how Keegan Murray starts off for the rest of the summer league. However, we did see the debuts of Shaquille O'Neal as well as Scottie Pippen Jr. Today. Scottie Pippen Jr. put up 14 points with 6 rebounds and 3 assists, while Shaquille O'Neal had 6 points with 6 rebounds and 1 assist on the Lakers summer league team as the Lakers defeated the Heat 100-66.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the big name for the Heat, Nikola Jovic, didn't really do much, only 3 points, 3 rebounds in his first game of the summer league. So Miami wasn't really that impressive to start off.
No.
As far as the summer league goes. But some of the other bits of news, and by the way, Malcolm Brogdon is being viewed as a sixth man in Boston's lineup. according to league sources, which is kind of surprising considering the fact that he's, you know, he's been a starter ever since his days in Milwaukee. So that seems, although I guess maybe perhaps his health is kind of part of the reason why, as he's failed to play more than 56 games in a season since the 2018-2019 season because of injury issues. So maybe perhaps that has something to do with it. But you know what, though, Lou? Let's talk about the Rudy Gobert trade for a minute here. Utah Jazz, they were faced with a decision. Do we trade Rudy Gobert or do we trade Mitchell? And, you know, from the sounds of things, it sounds like Mitchell may not even be off, may not be off limits either. Mitchell may still be traded this offseason. But Danny Ainge immediately went to work trading Rudy Gobert to the Minnesota Timberwolves in exchange for Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Walker Kessler, Jared Vanderbilt, Leandro Bolmaro, and four first-round picks, which, by the way, three of them, the years are as follows: 2023, 2025, and 2027 are all unprotected picks.
Okay.
While
that was a problem.
While the 2029 pick is a top five protected pick, so that will not convey if that pick ends up falling in the top five. Which, I mean, let's be perfectly honest here, it probably is not going to, with the. With the roster that Minnesota is probably going to have at that point. But the big thing here is you are pairing up Rudy Gobert with Karl Anthony Towns. You want to talk about the Twin Towers of, you want to talk about the Twin Towers of basketball. I don't think you can find two bigger, a bigger duo size-wise.
No, you can't.
Than Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns.
No, I wouldn't. No.
But honestly, Lou, to me, this kind of seems like a bit of an overpay. I mean, four first-round picks to go along with Malik Beasley, who was probably one of the better 3-point shooters for Minnesota, along with Patrick Beverley as well. I mean, to me, this just seems like a bit of an overpay.
I think it would be too.
So, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, Minnesota is obviously banking on the fact that this will basically get them, you know, over that hump and get them further into the playoffs, which, honestly, I think it probably will. But I think the main thing is this is the reason why the price for Kevin Durant is going up. And let's face it, Rudy Gobert may be good, but he's no Kevin Durant. So, this would be the price that I would expect Kevin Durant to fetch. But now that Rudy Gobert got four first-round picks, are we probably looking at least five in a Kevin Durant deal?
I think we are. At least five. Maybe a little bit more.
I mean, you look at Rudy Gobert, 15.6 points per game, 14.7 rebounds, which he led the league in rebounds per game, which, okay, that's fine and dandy, but you couldn't even coexist with Donovan Mitchell. Like, you couldn't put together a successful pairing with Donovan Mitchell. However, you know, size is going to be a huge problem, though, when it comes to facing Minnesota, so that may kind of even things out a bit. But, you know, it just seems like it was a huge price to pay to acquire somebody the likes of Rudy Gobert. I mentioned earlier that Kevin Huerter got traded to Sacramento. In return, Atlanta acquired Justin Holliday, Mo Harkless, and a lottery-protected 2024 first-round pick. So that means, I think, what is the lottery, 1 to 14? Or is it 1 to 15?
1 to 15, I think.
Okay, so basically if it falls past 15, then it will convert over to Atlanta in 2024. But you know that's exactly what I said earlier. You know, for a team that wants to upgrade their shooting, Kevin Huerter is definitely one of the guys you want to look at to upgrade your 3-point shooting.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not he can be a permanent, if he could be a permanent solution, I don't know about that. I don't know if he could be. I guess considering their roster, maybe he could be an everyday starter for Sacramento. But you know, I just don't know right now when it comes to. I mean, we've seen how previous Sacramento teams have gone when it comes to player breakdown. So, I would not be surprised if we see them as a potential dark horse for the Western Conference, like in terms of getting into the playoffs, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they're not going to be a contender, but I think they have at least a chance to maybe make it into the play-in tournament, maybe potentially sneak in as a 7 or 8 seed. Let's see. I already mentioned Kyrie Irving picking up the player option. So here's a little bit of news. The Nets had when they made a contract offer, the Nets had offered Kyrie Irving a 4-year max deal, which had 2 years guaranteed, and it also had triggers for years 3 and 4 based on the amount of games played. In the first 2 years of the deal. And basically, it was looked at as an extremely fair offer that shows that Brooklyn was negotiating in good faith. So, you know, you kind of have to think that this is basically all Brooklyn, essentially.
Yes.
When you want to talk about why everything failed.
Mm.
And wow, this apparently just happened. I cannot believe this. Breaking news for wrestling fans, Liv Morgan, who won the Women's Money in the Bank tonight, just cashed in on Ronda Rousey to become the SmackDown Women's Champion. After Ronda Rousey kayfabe injured her leg. She didn't really injure her leg, but she injured her leg, supposedly, in a match against Natalya Neidhart, part of the illustrious Hart family, to then get cashed in on by Liv Morgan, and Liv Morgan is now your new SmackDown Women's Champion.
You're losing it, Ronda. You're losing it.
First off, Lou, I can't believe this, because this is a woman who was on one of, you know, she was part of a group called the Riot Squad, which had her, It had It had Ruby Riott, and it also had Sarah Logan. And, you know, everybody was looking at them as, okay, you know, they got called up to the main roster. She is the only surviving. She is the only surviving member of that group to be still with the WWE to this day. And, you know, when they shockingly got broken up, everybody was looking at at Liv Morgan and saying, "Well, she's probably just going to be released." You know, they without the Riott Squad, she doesn't really have anybody. And instead, she has finally reached the mountaintop here. So good for Liv Morgan for tonight. They finally decided to give her, because she's one of the more popular women on the roster.
Right.
Now, let's see. Our next little bit of information here, Tyreek's, what's it called, Good Faith? Yeah, that's already, I already talked about Karl Anthony Towns, Ja Morant, I really shouldn't group all these things together because that means it makes it even harder to erase these things. Okay, here we go. Let's talk about the DeJuante Murray deal that sent DeJuante Murray to the Atlanta Hawks in exchange for Danilo Gallinari, who then got bought out by San Antonio, then signed with Boston for 2 years. San Antonio also got 3 first round picks and a pick swap as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looked like at first that, you know, they were going to be headed towards a rebuild under Murray, because the decision was, do we trade away Murray or do we trade away, Derek White? They chose to trade away Derek White, which meant, okay,
yes,
that means DeJuante Murray is going to be our point guard of the future and of the present. Instead, now San Antonio really seems to be entering a full-fledged rebuild. And,
yeah,
you know, now we got a legendary coach in Greg Popovich. You know, you kind of have to wonder, what is Popovich doing here? Like, is he really going to be willing to go through a rebuild?
No.
I mean, what are your thoughts, Lou? You know, how much longer do you think Popovich is going to probably be a coach in the league?
I give it 2 years. Tops. If he makes it through this coming season, he hasn't. He's getting up there now, and losing steam. I give him 2 years, and I don't think he's in the best of health either. So I think he's going to have to call it quits very shortly.
I mean, it just seems kind of shocking that San Antonio would be willing to go through this whole, extended rebuild, and still have Popovich as their manager, or I mean as their coach.
Right.
So, I don't know what the hell they're doing here. In San Antonio. However, I do believe the price is actually a good price, because Murray is one of those guys that you pair him up with Trae Young, that is a devastating twosome out there in Atlanta now.
It would be.
because now this takes off some of the pressure. This takes off some of the on-ball pressure off of Trae Young. That means Murray can also handle take on some of the ball handling responsibilities. Depending on what else Atlanta does, you could be looking at Atlanta once again, because I know they're in talks to trade away John Collins. You know, you could be looking at Atlanta as potentially another rising team in the East. All right, what are your thoughts, Lou? You know, Atlanta, it seemed like a couple years ago they were on the rise, and then all of a sudden they fell back to earth. But
yeah.
could they be back in the mix now all of a sudden after this move?
After this move, I don't think I'd be surprised if they did contend again. You know, that might be what they were looking for. So I think, you know, if they make more moves like this, they will be able to contend in the East next year. I think it's very, very possible. We're going to say the same for the Knicks.
Yeah. Now, you know, obviously now when it comes to San Antonio, though, they're going to be headed to a lengthy rebuild. And like I said, I'm still surprised that Popovich is going through. And all indications are Popovich is willing to go through a rebuild. So it's just very surprising to me. Let's see. Zion Williamson, he's another one of those players that signed a rookie max deal worth up to $231 million. This is a guy who has been who has struggled to stay on the court.
He's a flop.
And now it says here that he will have to, in order to make that number, he will have to qualify for a supermax, which would require him to make an All-NBA team or win MVP or Defensive Player of the Year. If he doesn't qualify, then he'll make about $193 million on this max extension.
Gee, $193 million, how's he going to live with that?
I mean, I don't see him winning MVP. I don't see him winning Defensive Player of the Year. Could he make an All-NBA team, though?
Huh, are you nuts? Forget it. If I will see another sneaker experience of that,
you know, if he has a fully healthy season, he could potentially put up the numbers worthy of all NBA.
Yeah, the word is if, though, Steve. I mean, I don't see it happening. Not from him. I mean, what has he really done? He's another wash up.
Because don't forget, he has three chances. He has three. There are three all NBA teams to potentially be placed on, even if it's a third, if it's the All NBA third team, he'll still get the he'll still qualify for the Supermax.
We'll see if that even happens, because I don't see it happening.
No, maybe not, but it's still, you know, there's still multiple chances for it to potentially happen.
Yeah.
By the way, I did not. I meant to bring this up last week. I don't know why I didn't. We do have an update on the WWE when it comes to Vince McMahon and his scandal that he's involved in. Yeah, it's. Let me just put it this way, Lou. It's bad. So basically. There are five different law firms that are pursuing claims on behalf of WWE investors.
Eep.
And it's they encouraged investors that are involved with World Wrestling Entertainment, any of them that have losses of $100,000 or more, to contact certain law firms. So this is to go along with that whole you know, hush money pact that he had with the with the woman that he was passing around the office.
Mm-hmm.
This gets even deeper because now you have 5 different law firms investigating you.
Yeah.
So this could potentially be very damaging to the WWE, depending on what happens.
Yes.
All right. Back to the NBA, though.
Okay.
Let's see. Some other notable things. Here's the thing, too. The Golden State Warriors, they've lost a considerable amount of players that were free agents. Otto Porter Jr., who started the last couple of games of the NBA Finals, he signed a 2-year deal with Toronto this just the other day.
Ooh.
A 2-year deal with Toronto, which will, I mean, who knows where he lands on their depth chart, because he's going to have to compete now with Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, Thaddeus Young, OG Anunoby, Chris Boucher, and Precious Achiuwa for playing time.
Yes.
So, I don't think it would, because here's the thing. Golden State, from my understanding, is that Golden State has been offering basically everybody the veteran minimum, because that's all they can, because they used the taxpayer exception. They used that on Kayvon Looney to sign him to a 3-year extension. So in return, they lost Otto Porter Jr. And now they've also lost Gary Payton II, as he signed a 3-year, $28 million deal with the Portland Trail Blazers.
Is that the son of the original Gary Payton?
Yeah, son. He is the son of NBA legend Gary Payton. Yeah.
That rang a bell.
But, you know, here's the thing, though. Everybody was saying that Otto Porter Jr. and Gary Payton II, that the Golden State Warriors would be the favorites to re-sign the both of them. And Golden State only offered the veteran minimum for both players. Not just that, they also lost Damian Lee, who was part of the rebuilding teams, also known as the Klay Thompson-less years with Golden State. Damian Lee ended up going elsewhere.
Right.
So there's, you know, Golden State's going to look. They did sign Dante DiVincenzo, though, to a 2-year deal. But Golden State's going to look just. Golden State's going to look just a little bit different next year on their bench.
Yeah. Klay Thompson that doesn't get hurt, I don't think there's going to be any real significant damage.
Yeah. You know, obviously if Klay Thompson didn't get hurt, things would have been, you know, they wouldn't have been in a rebuild all those years. You know, the one thing, though, with, I mean, obviously, you know, they've labeled Boston as the favorite, but I don't see how you can't look at Golden State. And, yeah, they lost a couple of players, but, you know, they kept their main rebounder off the bench in Kayvon Looney. Or actually, no, he'll be a starter. What am I talking about? Depending on what they decide to do with James Wiseman, that is. They brought in Dante DiVincenzo. Letting Otto Porter Jr. and Gary Payton the second go, it kind of makes me think that maybe perhaps Moses Moody is going to have a bigger role to play next year with the type of shooter that he's known for being. You know, it's entirely possible that he could be a potential replacement for Gary Payton the second. And maybe perhaps we'll see more minutes for Jonathan Kuminga, I guess, now that Otto Porter Jr. Is going elsewhere. I did forget about this. Brooklyn, before they even started on everything, they traded for Royce O'Neal of the Utah Jazz. And in exchange, they traded away their first-round pick for next year. So Brooklyn is not going to have a first-round pick for next year. To go on top of all of the other first-round picks they're not going to have. But O'Neal, I mean, I don't know how much of a, exactly what kind of effect this is going to have on Brooklyn next year. O'Neal, imagine trading away a first round pick for a guy who averaged 7.4 points per game, 4.8 rebounds, and 2.5 assists.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that seems awfully foolish to do. I can't really understand at this point what the Nets are doing nowadays with some of their moves that they attempt. But you know, it did happen. Maybe the biggest shocker, though, despite all the trades, was that James Harden declined his $47.4 million player option because he decided to actually be a team player and give the team financial flexibility to try and bolster the roster, which with James Harden declining his option, this also gives them full use of the full $10.5 million exception that they ended up using on P.J. Tucker. I mean, that right there shows that James Harden is a much different player compared to Kyrie Irving. The fact that he put his own team first ahead of himself. So, I am just, what are your thoughts on that, Lou? That James Harden decided to put a, decided to put his team before himself and decline all of that money.
Wow. Well, I mean, to give him all that money, to put this team first, I mean, that's something you don't see anymore. With me, I don't think I would give up all that money. But I think he made, a good gesture. He wasn't thinking just about himself, which is what most of the athletes seem to do nowadays, I go where the most money is and whatnot. I mean, he's actually, taking a step backwards and thinking about his teammates instead of just himself. Maybe we should have more players like that.
It just really shows you, Lou, what could have been
yeah.
if you had, if you had somebody, if Kyrie acted like that with Brooklyn or Kevin Durant, you know, that right there, just it shows that he actually wants to make it work with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's, it was very surprising to say the least, though. Some other bits of NBA news. First off, Celtics top assistant Will Hardy was offered the head coaching job of the Utah Jazz, and he has officially accepted it at the age of 34. He supposedly will be one of the youngest head coaches ever hired in the NBA. And he's also got quite the resume being under the coaching trees of Greg Popovich, Brett Brown, Steve Kerr, and just recently Ime Udoka. So now Utah has a new voice for their club. At the same time, David Fizdale has also agreed to become an associate general manager with the Utah Jazz. After spending the last 18 years as a head coach or an assistant for multiple franchises. So that's, you know, Utah, they are definitely, they've put in work, I'll put it that way, in this free agent period so far. Let's see. Oh, this was another thing here. So part of the salary movement that the Knicks did, they also traded Nerlens Noel, Alec Burks, along with two future second-round picks and cash to the Detroit Pistons in order to free up cap space to sign Jalen Brunson. It does not say, though, what they got in return for them. So regardless, it's, you know, the Knicks, they had to do a lot of movement in order to just free up all that cap space. You know what? Let's switch gears a little bit and let's talk about the Stanley Cup final. Colorado actually did it.
Yep.
And they may have actually set the record too for the shortest amount of time that a Stanley Cup has been dented into. And, you know, I just got to say, Lou, it's,
yeah,
you know, Colorado, it seemed like they just finally put everything together with that club. And it's weird because, you know, normally Andrei Vasilevsky is very clutch in elimination games, but, you know, I guess he just finally ran out of gas. I mean, what do you think?
They were playing on injury, you know, because, you know, even their star player was hurt. And when that happens, when you get to that magnitude, you got every player healthy if you have any chance of winning. And it didn't happen. They were just looking like, you know, like a train wreck. And, you know, that's how they lost. Plus with the Avalanche, you know,
right,
too strong on offense, they were faster, bigger, and, you know, that was another factor in too. So the chances were that Tampa Bay wasn't going to win this at all. I mean, you know, they made a great effort going six games, which most people thought wasn't going to happen either. I mean, you know, I think most of us projected, you know, four or five, so they, you know, proved all the experts wrong. But still, when, you know, when it was all said and done, they really didn't have much of a chance to beat the almighty Avalanche.
Well, hang on one second. We do have a bit of breaking news here. Something to keep an eye on. Apparently, Brooklyn may have found a suitor for Ben Simmons.
Thank God.
And it comes in the form of the Utah Jazz, who acquired all of those draft picks.
Aha.
Now, it's not really confirmed as of yet, but it sounds like it's being discussed right now.
Right.
That they are trying to move Ben Simmons to the Jazz, which would then free Brooklyn up to potentially acquire the likes of a Devin Booker or a Bam Adebayo, somebody to basically, somebody that's on that rookie max deal. Because this is...
This will free that up.
Who would you take?
If between the two, if it's up to me, I would take Booker over Bam Bam.
Well, obviously, I would definitely take Booker over Bam Adebayo, especially considering the fact that Bam Adebayo has had a history of disappearing at certain times.
Yes.
But. This is definitely a potential game changer in the Kevin Durant sweepstakes because it may potentially signal Utah moving on from Donovan Mitchell as well.
Yes.
If they're going to acquire the likes of Ben Simmons with that massive contract, I mean, it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts on this, Lou? You know, Ben Simmons potentially to Utah, where it seemed like, you know, this was what was going to potentially handicap the Nets with them having to hang on to Ben Simmons, but now it looks like they may potentially have a a suitor for Ben Simmons here.
Thank you, Jesus.
I'm just surprised right now.
That would be a welcome relief. Because if we had to sell for a second-class banana like him, our season would be shot to hell.
Right.
Simmons is considered a dumping ground. Plain and simple. Why do Utah carry the bag on this one?
It kind of makes me wonder if maybe perhaps it might be a star-for-star swap. Maybe Brooklyn may potentially acquire Donovan Mitchell.
Ooh, I love it.
It's a possibility because the trade values are around the same.
I like what I'm hearing.
Around the league, that is.
Yes.
But that is a situation that we will continue to monitor moving forward. But back to the Colorado Avalanche, though. You know, I talked about this previously.
Yes.
I almost really do think that that playoff playoff fatigue kind of played a factor here.
Oh, yeah. well, this time of year when you get to the final round, fatigue is going to settle for one, especially, you know, when you dread that you had, you know, two seven-game series, and then you play six against the Rangers, and you still won, you're dirty no good.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you know, they were, as Jackson Brown would say, running on empty, and they were. So it basically happened, and Avalanche had the rest. Of course, a lot of people think, well, they had 8 days rest, and sometimes that could lead to rust. But it didn't. But that didn't happen. I mean, you know, they got what they needed, and they, of course, the offense didn't let up, even when they lost a few games. But you know, they still hung in there, and that's how they were able to win it. They had all the ingredients, and they were not burnt out.
I mean, just think about it. How many straight, three straight years of being in the Stanley Cup final, you know, it has to take a toll on certain players. I mean, also the fact they didn't have Braden Point, that didn't help matters.
If Point would have been healthy, it might have been a whole different outlet. You know, they might have had a chance, maybe to a slight chance to win, but without your star player like Point, no, not in the final. That's what did him in.
Yeah, no, you know, it may or may not have made a difference, but it's still, you know, Braden Point is still one of the top players on the Lightning.
No question.
However, though, you know, the Lightning were being outscored the entire series. So, you know, it probably wouldn't have made as much of a difference.
No. As for that game, you know, as for that game three call, sorry, I said it's the sixth man on the ice.
Tampa
didn't like it, well, TS.
Yeah, I still say that there were six men on the ice that one Colorado win.
We can argue that. We can argue that till the end of the world, but you know. But I won't go. I won't do that.
You know, one of the things that I loved though is the fact that Nazem Kadri took the time to start to throw shots at the Toronto Maple Leafs after after they ended up winning the cup. Basically, he threw shots at Kyle Dubas, the GM of the Maple Leafs, talking about how he would never. I guess Dubas made a couple of comments that really stuck out. You know, about Nazem Kadri, about how Kadri was a failure basically and would never win a title, but yet Nazem Kadri is a Stanley Cup champion now. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I just love it. I love the fact that he took the opportunity to, you know, fire those shots at his former club.
Yep. Revenge is the best dish served cold, as they say.
Yeah. Let's see. There was a huge deal that actually went down, though, apart from the Stanley Cup Finals. The Los Angeles Kings, they acquired left winger Kevin Fiala from the Minnesota Wild.
Oh, yeah.
In exchange for the number 19 pick in this year's draft, as well as prospect Brock Faber. And he had a career year offensively with 33 goals and 85 points for the Minnesota Wild. Fiala has also agreed to a contract extension for 7 years with an average annual value of $7.875 million. So, I mean, the Kings were losing a little bit of offense because I believe Dustin Brown retired this year. So they end up basically getting that offense back in the with the work of, you know, with the addition of Kevin Fiala. So, yeah. I mean, that's a huge trade for a team that's looking to stay in playoff contention as they made the playoffs this year. What are your thoughts, Lou, on them going for a guy like Kevin Fiala who just had a career year?
Yeah, I think right where it is, you know. The other things, the Kings have, you know, really taken a nosedive since they won the Stanley Cup back in 2014. You know, I think they're going to need someone like Fiala if they're going to, you know, be able to contend, you know, in the next in the coming years. Because since then, the Kings have been on a nosedive.
Right, and he is still relatively young too. He's only 25 years old. He'll be 26 next year. He'll be 26 on the 22nd of July. So
July.
You know, he's basically entering his prime right now.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, if you're a team like LA who's looking to replace the scoring that you lost with Dustin Brown retiring, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Now, one other player, though, who everybody was wondering about his status was Brock Besser of the Vancouver Canucks. He signed a 3-year extension, which is worth about $6.65 million per season. So, needless to say, he's going nowhere, and the trade rumors should probably end when it comes to Brock Besser. He notched 23 goals and 23 assists in 71 games this year for the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of Vancouver, they are going to be well represented in this year's Hockey Hall of Fame class.
Yes.
The Sedin brothers, Henrik and Daniel Sedin. Henrik and Daniel Sedin, who are part of the, they're actually part of the front office now in Vancouver. They are two of the nominees, along with Daniel Alfredson of Ottawa Senator fame, Roberto Luongo, who is a longtime Vancouver Canuck, along with Rika Salinen and Herb Carnegie will go in as part of the builder portion of the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Isn't there a third Sedin that was involved in the NHL?
A third Sedin?
Yeah.
Or are you thinking of Sundin?
Okay, yeah, that might be it.
Yeah, you might be thinking of Sundin, because as far as I know, I don't think there was a third Sedin.
Okay, that's what threw me off. Yeah. It sounds so similar, too.
Yeah, they do. I mean, literally, the only thing that's different is one has an E, the other has a UN. Those are that's literally the only difference.
Those Europeans.
But, you know, I will say this, though. As far as the Sedin twins go, it is kind of a crime that they didn't win a Stanley Cup in their time with in their time with Vancouver. You know, they're one of the few groups of players that, when you look at players that should have won a cup, the Sedin brothers are two of those players. I mean,
Bruins.
Yeah, I know. If it wasn't for them losing to my Bruins, the Bruins wouldn't they would still be searching for a cup since the Well, actually, it was a pretty long time since the Bruins had won a cup at the time. I think since, what, the Neely years?
In 72.
I forget when. I think Neely was on the team at that time. Let me look real quick. Okay, that was back with Phil Esposito, with Derek Sanderson, Bobby Orr.
Bobby Orr, leaping into the air.
Yep. Yep.
Don't forget,
yeah,
I had
Yeah, that was before Cam Neely, actually. Johnny Busick,
yeah, yeah.
Ken Hodge. Yeah, that was before Cam Neely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it wasn't for the Vancouver Canucks collapsing like they did,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it would have been a very different ending
and
to the Stanley Cup final. Yeah, and it was at home too. That's, you know, the weirdest thing is that it wasn't just at home; it was a shutout too. It was a 4-0 shutout, and Vancouver. That year, Vancouver was one of the hardest places to win on the road. But you know, just looking at the Sedin twins, though, and their Hall of Fame worthiness, Sedin finished his career 1,306 games played, 393 goals, 648 assists for 1,041 points, and he was a career plus 147 while on the ice. So pretty much the only thing he was missing was a Stanley Cup, essentially. His brother Henrik Sedin, 1,330 games played, 240 goals, 830 assists for 1,070 points. And the thing is, too, both of them were playoff performers, too, in terms of production. So, yeah, it definitely there was a lot of talent between the Sedin brothers. Now the next, Daniel Alfredsson. You know, he, for so many years, was considered to be the, and this is a team that had Jason Spezza, keep in mind. This is a team that had Jason Spezza and Daniel Alfredsson on the same team. And Alfredsson was basically an Ottawa Senator all the way up until his final year, where he became a member of the Red Wings. But to finish his career, 1,246 games played, 444 goals, 713 assists for 1,157 points. And he was a plus 155. Needless to say, definitely Hall of Fame worthy numbers.
Oh, absolutely. Be crazy not to.
Going over to Roberto Luongo. Roberto Luongo obviously spent a majority of his career with the Vancouver Canucks. He actually had a few places: the Florida Panthers, Vancouver Canucks. Actually, no, he went back to Florida. So technically,
right?
I think he was with Florida most of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless though, 1,044 games played. He had a career record of 489 and 392, with 33 ties and 91 overtime or shootout losses.
Yes.
And he had a career goals against average of 2.52 and a career save percentage of 91.9%. Needless to say, definitely Hall of Fame worthy stats for Roberto Luongo. Are you surprised? Are there any names that that surprised you that didn't make the cut this year?
No, I'm not really surprised. I mean, that was not, I mean, I think they came with a good list this year, to say the least.
Oh, well, yeah, it's definitely a very worthy Hall of Fame list.
Well deserved. Luongo, absolutely well deserved. I'd be surprised if
This is their first year of eligibility, too, I believe.
That might be the only surprise, but I think when you're those two good of a players, I think it's obvious that they would get in there for first year, which is not easy to do.
Well, yeah, clearly. It's not,
Messier, Gretzky, Lemieux, all that, of course, those are obvious choices. So maybe that was a surprise they were able to do in their first year. I mean, you got to be especially good to do that.
Yeah, it's not easy to do, especially in the sport of hockey.
Oh.
The fact that there's so many big players. It's basically there's a lot to choose from. Essentially. But, regardless, though, it's a very worthy Hall of Fame class this year. And I don't think there's anybody that has any problem whatsoever with the...
Good for me.
Yeah, it's definitely a very good class. Some other bits of news around the league: the San Jose Sharks. I don't know why it took them this long, but they fired head coach Bob Boner, which is it's very odd considering the fact that most of all the available candidates have already been picked up. But they decided that basically it was the best interest in the club to allow the next Sharks general manager to have full autonomy related to the makeup of the on-ice coaching staff moving ahead. They also let go of all of the assistant coaches, John Madden, John McLean, and Dan Darrow. So
yeah.
Basically San Jose has to replace their entire coaching staff. Along with, finding a permanent general manager. By the way, I will say I am very surprised that Cale Makar got picked for the Conn Smythe Trophy.
Yeah.
I am kind of surprised. I thought it would have gone to. I thought it would have gone to MacKinnon. To either MacKinnon or Landeskog.
Oh, yeah.
But, he finished third overall in scoring with 8 goals and 29 points. Believe it or not, the person who finished first was the, what's it called, Connor McDavid. He finished in first, actually, in total points.
Right.
So, it just, I guess I'm kind of surprised because it's a defenseman, but the fact that he had 8 goals and 21 assists during the playoffs this year, maybe I shouldn't be all that surprised because I guess he was the highest total he did pass MacKinnon actually. MacKinnon had 13 goals and 11 assists. But Cale Makar beat him out by about 5 points. So, yeah, Cale Makar got the Conn Smythe Trophy for the playoff MVP. And
I'm not surprised. He had remarkable numbers, so I wasn't surprised at that at all.
And plus, he also won Rookie of the Year this year, I believe, didn't he? Or was it the Norris Trophy?
I think it was the Norris.
Yeah, it was the Norris Trophy that he won.
Yes.
Not just that, but you know what maybe even you know, I think what's also impressive as well is the fact that I'm trying to remember who it was. Was it Valerie Nichushkin? I forget who it was, but one of the Colorado Avalanche actually played with I think it was like a torn Achilles or something. Like he literally had to be carted after the Stanley Cup celebration and everything. Once they got off the ice, he had to be carted to the what's it called, to the locker room.
After this operation, wow.
I'm trying to find out who it was. One thing I did notice that Gabriel Landeskog ended up breaking his skate when blocking one of the shot attempts.
Yeah, I heard that.
And literally MacKinnon had to push him the entire way to the to the bench for him to be able to get off the ice because he was unable to skate off on his own power. It was Nichushkin. Valerie Nichushkin played with a nasty foot injury. And it said he couldn't get his skate on without medical assistance. And once he had the skate on, it was a question of playing through the pain.
Sometimes they do that.
And I'm looking at the photo right now. He had a swollen black and blue foot. I mean, I'm looking at this right now. Lou, it is nasty.
I don't think I want to watch.
No. I mean, I saw, you know what it looks like? It looks almost as if he took a puck without the skate on. He took a puck right to the foot.
Wow.
However, from his Instagram, he showed the x-rays. He actually fractured his foot.
Yeah, I imagine so.
So he was playing, who knows how long he was playing during this playoff with it, but he was playing throughout the Stanley Cup at the very least with a fractured foot.
Well, you hit it very well, that's for sure.
And that just shows the toughness and also the fact that Nazem Kadri also played with a broken thumb.
Yeah. Broken thumb.
You know, I thought everybody thought that Nazem Kadri would potentially miss the Stanley Cup final, but he played. I think he played the entire final actually, with the broken thumb. But actually, it says here Nichushkin. He fought through the injury and played nearly 23 minutes, which was the most for any forward on the Avalanche for Game 6. I mean, I'm still looking at that foot right now. That is absolutely nasty.
I'm sure.
Ooh. Oh, my God. Some other bits of news. Derek Lalonde has officially been named the new head coach of the Detroit Red Wings after being part of the Tampa Bay Lightning for the last 4 years. Yeah, he spent the last 4 years as an assistant coach with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and it looks like he is ready to go for Detroit. Meanwhile, Boston has officially announced Jim Montgomery, the former Dallas Stars coach, as their new head coach, the 29th in Boston's franchise history.
Now, this is kind of weird because Montgomery, who had been an assistant coach with the Blues for the last two seasons, he was originally fired by Dallas because of, I guess there was some sort of alcohol abuse or something. He ended up saying something, I guess, at the holiday party for the team, one of the in his final year with Dallas, and basically he essentially was forced to resign, essentially as the coach of the Dallas Stars back then. But apparently he's gone through rehab. And the thing about Montgomery is they say that he is a player's coach. So that's, you know, for a team that supposedly had confrontations with their former coach and Bruce Cassidy, Jim Montgomery is the guy that he's the one guy that you want to have replace Bruce Cassidy. So that was a huge win for the Boston Bruins. And there's a rumor that apparently David Krejci may potentially return next year officially to the Boston Bruins. So they may potentially have their second line center. Elsewhere in the league, for the New York Islanders, Zdeno Chara is not ready yet to make a decision on his NHL future, and he plans to wait until September, according to his agent, Matt Keeter. Said he's going to take the summer with his family to assess where he's at physically, where his family's at, and then make a decision in September. So basically, you know, he's not going to really have much time to get ready for the season then, if he's going to make a decision in September. But this year, in 72 games for the Islanders, he posted 2 goals and 14 points, along with 90 blocked shots, and was still very physical, 125 hits and 85 penalty minutes. One of the big winners, though, of this playoff was Nick Paul, the fourth line player for the Tampa Bay Lightning. He officially signed a 7-year, $22 million contract with the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is a significant raise over his 2-year, $2.7 million deal. But he had 16 goals and 16 assists in 80 games for the Lightning this year, along with 5 goals and 4 assists in 23 playoff games, despite playing through an MCL sprain as well as a shoulder AC joint sprain. So the Tampa Bay Lightning lock up one of their young players for the foreseeable future. Also, Anthony Duclair apparently injured his Achilles tendon during off-season training, so he is expected to undergo surgery, and sounds like he will be sidelined for an extended period of time. Who knows if he will be ready for the start of the next season for the Florida Panthers. This year, he posted career highs with 31 goals and 58 points in 74 games. So that could be a potentially big loss for Florida, depending on how long he has to miss. Yeah. Oh, you know what, Lou? You know what we should talk about? There are some rumors that are floating around college sports. In particular, yeah. It looks like that alliance between the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and I forget what the other conference was. That basically they tried to band together in order to get rid of in order to take on the SEC. Well, apparently that alliance is dead. that alliance is dead now because USC and UCLA are planning to head to the Big Ten as early as 2024.
Dumb.
It doesn't really make sense when you consider when you consider where all of the teams are situated within the Big Ten and the Pac-12. USC and UCLA.
USC know about playing in, 3,000 miles away, playing up against like Penn State, Minnesota, Michigan State. Well, they don't play those teams that if they don't play them very often, or once every like 3 or 4 years, and they got to travel all those miles. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Not to mention a geographical stupid, being a stupid geographical imbecile to begin with. I mean, this is just completely insane.
Exactly.
That's
the thing I was going to say is the fact that literally USC and UCLA are the only two teams on the western part of the United States in that conference. Assuming they officially go through with the move. And apparently the major topic of discussion here was the Big Ten's media rights. That's why USC and UCLA are moving from the Pac-12.
I'll sum it for you in one word, Steve. And I think you know what the world is going to say.
Dumbass.
Thank you.
Now, it sounds like, though, this is the beginning of a larger story, though, because chatter has emerged about this potentially trending into two mega conferences, with the Big Ten being on Fox and the SEC being on ESPN. So it sounds like the Big Ten is trying. It sounds like the Big Ten is trying to pursue a super conference with this move. Which I don't know. I mean, they can try to compete with the SEC all they want, but the SEC is the SEC.
Yeah,
and
you don't mess with
that. You don't mess with the SEC, and not just that. The rumor is the SEC is going to be adding three new teams in the near future, that being Clemson, Florida State, and Miami.
Yeah.
The Miami Hurricanes, that is.
You go from Big East to ACC to this. What's next?
I mean, it's, I think it's a bad move for Clemson, first of all, because Clemson, they have an easy schedule compared to the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the SEC, that schedule all of a sudden, I mean, the SEC, they may have teams that have low records, but I hate to tell you this, but I think Vanderbilt would probably be a better, a bigger challenge for Clemson compared to some of the other teams that they face.
Vanderbilt is a joke.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And Vanderbilt is a joke. So, but the thing is with the SEC, they literally just added Texas and Oklahoma. And now you're looking at them potentially bringing in Clemson, Florida State, and the Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah.
I mean, it really looks like at this point it's going to be a battle of two different conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC at this point.
Yes.
It's almost like monopolizing the entire media industry, basically, for college sports.
It is. Not to mention
now,
a
however,
major
it
hit.
Is. Yeah. Now, however, though, it is not known if this is just for football or if it's for basketball as well.
I think it's for all the major sports.
Oh, is it? It's for all of the major sports?
First I thought it was going to be basketball, and I thought it was going to be football. I thought they were talking about being in the basketball situation, but apparently I think it's going to be moving to all the sports, not just football.
Oh, Jesus. If that's the case, then
I'll say this. CBS is really going to hate losing the SEC this is the case, because there's I mean, they honestly, if I'm looking at the two matchups, I'm probably taking SEC over the Big Ten. So
yeah. And hey, Don't forget our favorite on the field reporters network for the SEC on CBS.
Well, now they're on ESPN. They're going to be on ESPN.
Yeah, we're losing our girl, man.
Yeah, it's that's why I kind of feel bad for CBS, because the SEC was basically a huge moneymaker when they don't have the NFL, when they don't have the NFL playing.
When the NBA TV contract is up, have them go out to the NBA. Simple.
They could. They could,
yeah,
but the
why
problem
not?
Is the NBA.
Why not?
Problem is the NBA is mainly partnered with TNT, though.
They were partnered with TNT. We were NBC as well.
Yeah. I don't think.
Well, I mean,
the thing is, I don't think.
Well, look, TNT and because TNT and CBS shared the NCAA. So why not? I think it could work. They work well in college. Why can't they work it well in the pros too?
The problem is, though, is that CBS and NBC are rival companies
networks.
in terms of networks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when the contract is up, they might be looking to go somewhere else.
Yeah, possibly.
It's a thought.
Now we do. It is a thought. Yeah. Now we do have a bit of. We do have a bit of controversy in Major League Baseball. I don't know if you've heard of this, Lou.
Again.
But it involves Freddie Freeman, and why he fired his agent Casey Close.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, he helps with negotiations, and all of a sudden you want to fire him?
Well, apparently it was revealed last week when he went back to Atlanta with the Dodgers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It turns out, apparently, his former agent had received a final offer from the Atlanta Braves, which was It was basically the same dollar amount as the Dodgers, but with one less year.
Right.
And according to what's been passed around out there, he would have taken the offer to return to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And needless to say, he literally just found out about it this past week, which is why he immediately fired his agent. Because he said it was literally one of the hardest things for him to do was leave Atlanta.
I know.
And, the big thing was that he never received a final offer from Atlanta, because he believed that Atlanta never gave a final offer when, in fact, they did.
Mm-hmm.
But he never received it. Now, there's a possibility that his agent might potentially be looked into here, Lou.
Mm-hmm.
His agent may potentially be looked into I don't know if they could look into him for fraud. I don't know what this would fall under.
Well, what else is there?
He basically screwed him for his own benefit. The agent gets a higher kick.
the agent gets a higher kickback if his client signs for one more year.
You got taken.
So, I mean, it's entirely possible that, you know, he could potentially maybe sue his former agent, possibly.
Go for it. I think he has all the right to sue. You got cheated, man.
Definitely.
So yeah,
he definitely does.
Fight for what's yours.
Especially considering all of the, you know, all of the emotions that he showed in his return.
Yes.
You know, he clearly never wanted to leave, but it was being painted as if Atlanta basically forced him to.
Yeah, because I knew Freeman didn't want to leave. I mean, you know, even though that it was probably going to happen, but I knew he didn't want to leave. I mean, because, you know, he brought Atlanta back, you know, back to glory last season, even though they didn't start, you know, forging him until August. And then to have him leave and go out west, which, you know, because in the beginning of the season, I think they were really missing Freeman because Atlanta was really struggling. But then they went on a 14-game winning streak, and you know, they were like, forget Freeman. And what was, you know, Atlanta's loss came to be the Dodgers' game. But now the Dodgers, of course, are in a battle with the Padres and maybe even the Giants. So that's going to be, you know, interesting as we move along the summer. But Atlanta, you know, is now right there. And now they're only 2.5 games out of first because the Mets lost.
Yep. And, you know, it's a bad thing for the for the Mets, too, because – well, good news is they're getting Scherzer back. The bad news is Chris Bassett. Chris Bassett went down.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically just traded one starter for another.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know officially when DeGrom is coming back. It might. I mean, he's going to go for rehab starts. I think he might be back just before the All-Star outbreak or maybe after it comes, but, you know, the thing is, though, with DeGrom, he's been out a year, so I don't know if it's gonna, you know, how it's gonna, you know, factor in with his performance. I mean, because you might lose after being out for quite a while. So that's my concern.
Possibly.
Well, yeah. Well, I know a lot of Mets fans, you know. So you know, I was,
yeah.
You know, mentioned half of them are on my show. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, though, it's weird because it sounds like he may not be a Met for much longer past this season because from what it sounds like Atlanta, it looks like Atlanta may try to pry him away from New York.
Okay. Going to your division rival. Oh, boy.
So that could be very interesting. Depending on how this Mets season finishes out. So if I were the Mets, I would very much hope that I can stay in the playoff picture and convince DeGrom to stay here.
Yeah, I think they're going to stay in the playoff picture unless they have a total collapse in the second half of the season. I mean, you know, but still, I mean, they were up, what, 9 games, I think, like 6 weeks ago, and now they only have a 3.5 game lead. I mean, yeah, injuries, I think, are starting to pile up. And we'll just have to see what happens, you know, when the Gron comes back, whenever he does, and when Scherzer comes back this week. You know, because right now the Mets are really struggling. They got swept in the last series at home. They lost tonight. So, you know, signs are beginning to show that they're losing their grip.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I mean, they're only 2.5 games ahead
yeah.
right now. So, and you know, Philadelphia is not out of it either. I mean, they're 7.5 back, but they're only 2.5 back of the wild card. In what's considered a major series against St. Louis this weekend.
Yeah.
With both Philly and St. Louis having split the series so far, one game apiece.
But I mean, the Mets, you know, they've also split their series as well, one game apiece.
Yes.
It's entirely possible that by the time we talk next week, Atlanta could potentially be on top of the East.
I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised. Philly, well, 7.5 is doable, but it's kind of tricky though. You know, that's a little bit far back. You know, between that kind of a division, it's possible, but they're going to need a lot of help. You know.
Oh yeah, they definitely will.
They need help. I mean, they did find, you know, before they fired Girardi. I mean, they were in the doghouse. I mean, they didn't show any signs of life at all. They didn't have a pulse. But, you know, when Girardi got the axe, they started doing better.
Because they started playing.
Come back from 7 strokes from a golf championship, and you can't make that up, you know, just like that. That's gonna take a lot more moves on their part. So we have to think of that one. I'm not giving up on Philly just yet, but if you're going to make a move, you better do it right now, Buster.
Right. You know, the only reason why they made that comeback is because they started playing their younger players. So
right.
You know, that plays a huge role, obviously. But that's part of the reason why why Girardi got fired.
Yeah. Who'd have thought, after he got fired, they got better. Who'd have thought?
Exactly. But you know what? That is gonna do it a little bit for us tonight. I'm kind of pretty much at the end of my list here. So we will be back next. We will be back next Saturday night.
Well, hang on. I got one for you.
Okay.
We didn't discuss. Well, I don't know how big a UFO is, but what about the College World Series that we just wrapped up?
Oh yes, I completely forgot about the College World Series because Ole Miss, who ultimately ended up eliminating the Arkansas Razorbacks, they swept Oklahoma, I believe, right?
Oklahoma, yep.
They were the last four
to get in, and they survived.
I mean, you want to talk about unlikely. You know, anybody that put down a bet on Ole Miss at the beginning of the tournament probably made out like a bandit in terms of I don't know what the odds were actually.
I don't know what the nobody really pays attention to the odds in college baseball, especially in this part of the country. I mean, we got to put that on the back burner. You know, that's more like, you know, in the South and the West. You know, that's probably over there. Here, it barely is a blip on the radar. So I don't know what the odds were on that, but I wouldn't be surprised that they, you know, got better odds for next year.
Possibly. I mean, it depends. You know, they finished off the season 32-22 this year.
Not bad.
I think it depends. I think it depends on who they may potentially lose to the draft. You know, what kind of recruits they have coming in for next year. But looking at, let's see, they got through Arizona. They got through Miami. Then they got through Arizona again, 4-3, and then they became the regional champion.
Right.
Which then going to the College World Series. Wait a minute, hang on. No, then they had the Super Regionals, where's the other part of the bracket? They ended up facing off against Southern Missouri, I think. Or is that?
Yes.
Yeah, Southern Missouri. They ended up sweeping Southern Missouri to get in.
That became Southern Missouri.
Yep, and then they ultimately advanced out of bracket two.
Yes.
Out of Stanford, Auburn, Arkansas, and themselves, they ended up advancing out of bracket two by winning over Arkansas. Wait a minute, did they lose a single game at all?
I think they
did. Well, besides Arkansas. Besides Arkansas, did they lose a single game?
I'm trying to think, but no, I don't think, other than Arkansas, I don't think they did lose a single game.
Okay, so it must have been, yeah, Arkansas must have been their only loss then.
Yes.
And they faced off against Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
who, let me try to find them. Oklahoma, they had, they were in the Gainesville bracket, against Florida, Liberty, and Central Michigan.
Yes.
They eliminated Virginia Tech in the Super Regionals.
Not surprised.
To then get in, and they eliminated, or they survived past Texas A&M, Texas, and Notre Dame. Like, honestly, that wasn't really much of a challenge, though, as far as Notre Dame went. So, you know what? I guess I'm not really that surprised that Ole Miss ended up winning, because
really,
honestly, bracket two was probably more of a challenge.
Okay.
Compared to, because here's the thing: Arkansas wasn't ranked this year.
No.
But yet they're considered to be one of the better college teams.
How do you become one of the better college teams without being ranked?
I think it's because of the timing of their losses.
Okay, yeah.
This year. I think it's because of the timing. They started off very they started off basically on the right foot, but then for some reason something happened where they started going away from playing Arkansas baseball, basically, and they were a completely different team. Like a
right.
team, they looked like a team that shouldn't even make the College World Series. But then they turned it around right at the very end, punched their ticket into the regionals, and basically that's because I mean they were in the Stillwater regionals, and looking at the teams they had to face, I mean Grand Canyon, Missouri State, that's. Really, their right. only toughest challenge there was Oklahoma State, which they had that asshat that basically celebrated after he hit a huge homer as part of a complete onslaught that Oklahoma State had put on them at one point.
It's great to see if anybody has been named as their college athletics.
Huh?
Does Grand Canyon have anything good in their like programs? I mean, because they're crappy in they're halfway decent in basketball, but you really don't hear much about them because they're minuscule compared to other other schools. I mean, I just only found out about Grand Canyon about a few years ago. I didn't even know they had an athletic program.
I haven't heard of them at all. Like literally.
Okay.
Just seeing them in baseball. Seeing them in baseball is the first time I've actually heard of them.
Oh, you didn't hear about them in basketball? I mean, they're crappy in basketball for sure. But then again, when you play in those kind of conferences that nobody really pays attention to because they're small name conferences and whatnot, you don't get them a lot of attention. But now you. I mean, they did make a little bit of noise in the college tournaments the past couple of years. Not much, but they did get, a little bit of noise. So, and I don't know if they have a football team or not, but I'm sure they're nowhere near competitive as in basketball or even baseball, for that matter.
Yeah. I'm looking at the teams that everybody beat. Ole Miss, Arizona was unranked. They beat the sixth-ranked Miami.
Okay.
And then they beat Arizona again. They beat Arizona again, who, of course, was unranked. Arkansas,
right.
When they beat Arkansas, Arkansas was a team that already beat seventh-ranked Oklahoma State.
Wow.
They beat seventh-ranked Oklahoma State. They beat second-ranked Stanford.
Yeah.
Or wait a minute, no. Wait a minute, hang on, no. I've got, let me see. No, yeah, they did beat second-ranked Stanford. They squashed them, actually, 17-2.
Yeah.
And then Ole Miss beat Auburn, who was 14th-ranked. Then they beat Arkansas 13-5. Arkansas then beat Auburn 11-1 in the elimination
right.
bracket. Then Ole Miss lost very slightly 3-2 to Arkansas, and then Ole Miss shut out Arkansas in that final game to advance to the College World Series.
Yeah.
Or to the College World Series final, I should say. Ole Miss then beat Oklahoma 10-3 in the first matchup, and then they were down, I think it was 2-0 or 2-1 in
yes.
game two. And they came back, and I think it was like the seventh or eighth inning or something. They came back and ended up defeating Oklahoma 4-2 to take the series.
Right.
So needless to say, I mean, I would say probably, you know, Ole Miss, they did, for being the last team to officially make it in, they did have a tough road, but honestly, you know, I mean, they beat a team that had a tougher road to make it to the College World Series.
Give me that.
To make it to the College World Series brackets in Arkansas, because Arkansas had to get through Stanford, they had to get through. They had to get through Oklahoma State. They had to get through a couple of other teams as well. I'm looking at Oklahoma right now. They beat Texas A&M, who was fifth ranked. Then they beat Notre Dame, and then they beat Texas A&M again. This time it was a little bit less of a little bit lower of a scoring game. So, you know, I guess I should say it's pretty impressive the fact that even though these were two unranked teams that were in the College World Series finals, Ole Miss, probably the more impressive of the two teams when it comes to who they beat to get to the College World Series final. So, you know, regardless, though, I mean, I would be very surprised if Ole Miss makes it back there again.
Mm.
I would be very, very surprised because
I think we all would.
You know, every year it's something different. You know,
yeah.
the roster is going to be completely different every year.
Right.
So you never know. We do actually have a bit of an interesting bit of news. Donald Cowboy Cerrone has officially retired from the sport of mixed martial arts.
Smart move.
With a 36-17 record with 2 no contests after losing tonight by guillotine choke to Jim Miller. He took off his gloves and officially laid them on the mat, announcing his retirement.
Yeah. I don't get it. I mean, I know NFL players, former NFL players are looking for something after their careers, but going from NFL to, you know, UFC or MMA or whatever. I mean, I don't think that's a smart move. You took a beating in the NFL. You want to go take another beating in a sport that's even, you know, like 10 times more contact than football. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, with Greg Hardy as an example, he went from the NFL to the UFC, and or not straight to the UFC. He did go straight to the UFC, I think. I mean, it would be different if it wasn't a heavyweight. The thing is with heavyweight fighters.
Yes.
You can basically, as long as you have power in your punches, you can pretty much stand up against any other fighter.
I mean, if you're looking at, you know, maybe ass whooping, I mean, be my guess, but still.
Yeah. I mean, Greg Hardy, you know, he had power in his punches. The problem is he was very poor with his accuracy, with his punch location.
For sure.
And that's partially why he ultimately ended up leaving the UFC. Donald Cerrone, though, this is a guy who basically got picked up by the UFC after they bought out the WEC, where he was one of the longtime contenders down there in the WEC. He ends up coming up to the UFC as part of the acquisition. And for the most part, he was probably one of the more electric fighters of recent years to have fought in the UFC. Problem is, he ends his career on a 7-fight winless streak. Originally, one of the no contest was originally a majority draw, but it was overturned after his opponent tested positive for marijuana. So that ended up becoming a no contest. I mean, at this point, it's like you keep getting finished, and because like out of the 6 fights that he lost. The last 6 fights that he lost, about only one of them was by decision. So, I mean, if you're gonna keep getting finished like you are, you know, he basically did Dana White a favor in not trying to convince Dana White to convince him to retire. He basically retired on his own. At the age of 39, you know, it makes sense because even though he's a welterweight, I mean, at some point, the sport starts to slow down for you. And
well, not just that, but you know, with your athletic ability too, slows down.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying is, you know, your body slows down. Your reaction time isn't the same. You know, the sport in general basically slows down for you. So, and not in a good way. So basically, I mean, he could have been like BJ Penn and continued to fight until Dana White basically had to force him to retire. Or he could do what he did tonight and basically say that he was announcing his retirement like he did.
Right. I think that's a smart thing because, you know, that one of the all-time wrestlers from the 1980s, you know, wants to fight again at the age of 72. I'm like, no, you've got to be nuts to go fight back in the ring at your age.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're talking about Ric Flair.
Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Dumb.
You know, I do not understand. Not just that, but not only is he 72, he has a fucking pacemaker. Do you know how dangerous this is going to potentially be? I mean, he's calling it his last match.
he could potentially die in that ring.
That's what I'm saying. If you want to commit suicide in the ring, which looks like what you're doing.
He could potentially die in that ring if something, if one thing happens, you know, one wrong, if
yeah.
one chop in the wrong location happens, you know, he could basically drop dead right in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, well, maybe over time I'll come to a sense and, like, call it off, which would be the smart thing to do.
Well, he enters the ring for the last time at the end of July here, July 31st.
Day after my mother's birthday.
So, I mean, the card, from what it looks like, the card that he's going to be on, what they're
yeah.
dubbing, they're dubbing it as Ric Flair's final match.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like it's going to be pretty stacked because I'm seeing a whole bunch of name wrestlers from Impact Wrestling. I know they got some people from New Japan Pro Wrestling that are coming in. Which, by the way, New Japan Pro Wrestling, their event that they had, Forbidden Door, with AEW, was absolutely fantastic last week. Yeah, I'll put it this way, you know, being a fan of the WWE for so many years, getting to see a Japanese style of wrestling, it is so much different, you know. A lot of people wonder, you know, are people going to like the Japanese style of wrestling? And it just looked so
yeah.
it looked so much better than some of the matches that you see going on in the WWE.
Yeah. Well, I guess just like the song says back in the 80s, turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so. Okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So,
by the way,
I've
heard Ric Flair's opponent may be Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, by the way.
Okay. Now you're dead. So long, Ricky. Nice knowing you.
So, yeah. Another option was going to be Matt Cardona. Another option was going to be Matt Cardona was going to defend his NWA World Heavyweight Championship against Flair. I guess it would be in a way for Flair to retire with one more title, with one
yeah.
more NWA title under his belt. But he ultimately got injured after that, and he was forced to forfeit his title. So that won't be his opponent. But... you know, who knows? His opponent is still to be announced at this point.
Rats are rock.
But anyways, we got about only 2 minutes left on tonight's show. So I want to thank Lou, obviously, for joining me as always. Thank you to Kyle for calling in tonight.
Yeah,
and thank you to Alex for stopping by as well. We will be back next week for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. And as a reminder, everybody stay tuned for the Big Brother recap podcast. They're going to be starting soon with the cast expected to be announced this week. We will probably have a cast assessment combined with a recap show this week, probably on Friday night, depending on what Jim has planned. We will probably have an interview podcast as well some point this week. So those who are wondering, keep an eye on Blog Talk Radio, and we will get that information to you guys when we have it. So until then, everybody have a good rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly.
And happy 4th to you all.